Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte. The spirit of performance is what defines Acura. And now, it's electric. Introducing the ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Hello, this is the China Sports Insider Podcast. My name is Hike Balian, and I am with Mark Dreyer. We have been away for the summer, but now we are back to talk about the wide, wide, wide world of sports in China and beyond. This week, we talk about the controversy from the 2000 Summer Games in the sport of badminton. A tennis player made some waves at the US Open, and this time it was a male player. And the Chinese women's volleyball team competed at an event wearing N95 masks. And this is kind of a WTF of the week for me, Mark. So we're going to get to those stories in a minute. But first, Mark, it's been a while. How was your summer? Where are you right now? What's going on?
Yeah, it's great to be back, Haig. I spent a lot of the summer actually in Canada. So I kind of bolted from Beijing just to the start of the summer when it was looking like a bit of a lockdown there. I'm actually in Taiwan right now on my way back to the capital in the next few weeks. So it will be good to be back, I guess.
But time will tell.
Anyone who's either still there or has kind of traveled in and out of China at any point over the last 2-3 years, I've done now 9.5 weeks of quarantine. So I'm kind of done with the whole thing. And it's just, you know, I think we were having this conversation before we came on, but just the fact that the rest of the world has completely moved on from COVID and China is still very much stuck in just frozen in time. You know, there's only so many times that we can talk about yet another event being canceled, even though I did hear that apparently the World Table Tennis Championships are coming up soon in Chengdu, of all places. Which sounds remarkably unlikely, given the extended lockdown in Chengdu. I mean, I was going to say it's an international event, but when it comes to table tennis, it's largely speaking just a national championships for Chinese players anyway.
Sure.
But, you know, given all that, you know, I think as the podcast evolves, China sports was already pretty niche post-Olympics. And so we'll be kind of exploring ways to perhaps widen evolve the podcast into something a little bit more mainstream, whether we talk about other things or maybe perhaps look further afield in Asia. But, you know, there's lots to talk about this week for sure. And there's lots of guests we have lined up that want to talk about the wider world of sports plus China plus whatever else is in the mix. And so, as I said, yeah, good to be back. How was your summer?
My summer was pretty good. I left China just a couple of weeks after you did, and it was sort of in a. I don't want to say it was in a rush. There was some planning that went there, but you know, it just didn't seem like zero COVID was going to abate at all. I think as a policy, it's just there to stay for the unforeseen future. So we decided to take off a little bit, and like you, I mean, it was quite stark when we landed in Europe to see nobody was masking inside the airport. And I was like, what is going on here? Like, how is this even possible? And it really just showed the difference between where the rest of the world is right now and where China is, for better and for worse.
I sort of feel a little bit stuck between the two sides because in Taiwan right now, they've just opened it up as of, I think, a week. In the coming weeks, they will open it up to visa-free travel for 60 countries. But they're still going to have 3 days of quarantine. And there's a lot of people saying, well, it's ridiculous. You know, can't have 3 days. And I'm thinking, like, this is almost back to normal. It's so different to China. But on the same side, I see their point. And the fact that basically quarantine, you know, where it was at 3 weeks of quarantine for China, now to have 10 days, you know, and the whole thing has become normalized. And then as soon as you step foot out of China, from the moment you get into the international airports and you realize there's not a soul there, and then you land on the plane on the other side and there's no masks in sight, and you think, oh, yeah, okay, it's not normal in China.
And it's crowded at these airports. Like, there's so many people going on. Like, I went to the Amsterdam airport just at the height of their sort of crisis that they were having. Mark, I mean, I've never seen an airport like this before. It was just, the lines were, it was absolutely crazy.
Just don't remember seeing an airport. Yeah.
I guess not. So I'm talking to you right now from Vermont. My family, yes. my wife and I just bought a new house here. Well, I say new, but it's an old 1870s era farmhouse that we're, you know, beginning to do some work on. Parts of that is really fun. Other parts are a little bit overwhelming.
I mentioned before we were going to kind of expand the conversation on the podcast.
Yes.
And perhaps we'll do a bonus episode on home improvement, because you were telling me before we came on, I'm now familiar with the word spackle,
which
I wasn't before. Some people may know, but for those who don't, tell me if this is right. Basically, different kinds of putty that you can put around nails on houses.
Well, it's not about when you move into a house, especially a house that's 150 years old, there is going to be a million holes in the walls and chips in the walls and these kinds of things, right? So before you paint it, you have to repair that, and that's what spackle lets you do relatively easily. Mark, this is not going to be a home improvement show. This is not where we're going to be heading. But right
like
now,
quite
it is
a sport, Hig. And speaking of which,
it is my world. It is my world right now. But okay, but let's move on from there, Mark. Like, you know, as we mentioned, like, zero COVID isn't going anywhere, and no story we've missed over the summer demonstrates that as much as what happened with the Chinese women's volleyball team at a tournament in the Philippines, where they actually wore their masks during a match. Is there any other national team that this could happen to, Mark?
Today, no. But actually, when I was thinking about this, and I wasn't quite sure how to react, because it was like, you know, they had the masks on and then they took them off, and surprise, surprise, they started playing better and won the game.
Yeah.
Imagine that. There was that story in the Olympics. Again, different time. It feels like another different lifetime at this point. But, you know, it was only 6 months or so ago, where I think it was the Canadian women were wearing masks because they weren't sure that the Russian team had been properly cleared. And then there was another one involving a Chinese team against the Germans. And this was just before the summer, where I think the Germans didn't want to play the Chinese because they had previously tested and then they weren't sure that the Chinese team were clear. So anyway, I think back then, particularly in China at the Olympics, the worry was, look, I don't want to get COVID because, you know, the quarantine risks and the quarantine fear of being basically, you know, locked down in China for an unknown number of weeks, I think was real amongst athletes. At least the worry was front of mind for them. But now it's, you know, no one really cares about COVID. I would say, obviously generalizing, but generally speaking, people don't, and they don't want to get it. It's an inconvenience, but it's not like it's the same way. So yeah, I would say today, no, probably if there's a sports team playing in masks, yeah, that's probably going to be Chinese.
Yeah. And I thought what was interesting about this case though, was the reaction in China. A lot of fans were like, what were you doing? Why did you have these masks on? Right.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, I'm always slightly wary of sort of looking at online reaction and sort of generalizing from them, because these days there's millions of comments and you can basically, you know, support any narrative you want. But there was definitely some mixed reactions. Some people saying, like, why are our athletes, you know, still doing this? And, you know, but it's like there's been a lot of stories. We covered some around the Olympics with athletes, Chinese athletes getting COVID in training camps, all over the world, and not worried about not being able to come back into their own country for the Beijing Games. You know, so this is still a worry. And you know, there's some COVID stuff that's still impacting Chinese athletes as they try to travel overseas. And we'll be talking a little bit about that later in the show.
Well, okay, so let's move on to another really big story that happened just a couple of weeks ago, which was that badminton story that came out of the 2000s Olympics in Sydney. Ye Zhaoying made an explosive claim that an Olympics official ordered her to throw a semifinal game against a teammate so that teammate, Gong Zichao, would stay fresh for the gold medal game. Can you give us some context, Mark? What actually happened here?
Okay, so this goes back to the semi-final stage, and China has long been dominant in badminton. So Sydney Olympics in 2000, there were three Chinese athletes, and then the fourth one was a Dane, Camilla Martin. And in the first semi-final, which was the two Chinese players, the feeling amongst the Chinese coaches was that Gong was going to have a better chance if she had to face Camilla Martin in the final than Ye Zhaoxing. So they basically said, right, Gong's going to win this one. Don't make it too obvious, but don't push it too hard because we wanted to stay fresh. Now, in the end, Martin did win against another Chinese lady in the other semifinal, and Ye threw the match and Gong won. And then Gong won against Martin to take home the gold. And, you know, I don't remember this. I'll be honest. I've only been following, you know, Chinese sports and the world of sports since I moved here in towards the end of 2007. So this kind of predates my time. But I've been speaking to a bunch of people about this and their recollections. And quite a few people said, no, we knew about this at the time. So, you know, apparently the coaches were almost boasting about this and saying, look what a great job we did to basically rig the draw to ensure that China got the gold. So I think what's really fascinating about this is that Ye has now gone on camera to basically talk about her own disappointment that she felt 22 years ago that she was deprived of the chance to win that individual Olympic gold. And what's interesting, who interviewed her? Well, Camilla Martin, the Danish player involved, because she is now a badminton host at TV2, one of the sports channels in Denmark. So kind of remarkable about the whole thing. And I was in contact with Camilla Martin this week. Unfortunately, we weren't able to get her on the show, but, you know, just to find out how much she knew about it at the time and in the intervening years, and also like how the whole interview came about. Because as we'll get onto in a sec, she is a pretty interesting character.
Yeah, let's get into that right now, Mark. Why is she an interesting character?
Okay, so her husband is the couple, they're Chinese sporting royalty. Husband is Hao Haidong, who is a soccer legend, a big goal scorer. However, a couple of years ago, they were both already living overseas in Spain. They've basically been erased from the Chinese internet because he made some comments in support of this sort of potential new party that was going to overthrow the Communist Party. And anyone who knows anything about China was like, that's not what you want to be talking about unless you want to get into a lot of trouble. Now, obviously, they've left. They're overseas. And so that's why I think, yeah, obviously felt comfortable in exposing, if you will, kind of the inner dealings of what happened, even though it was 22 years ago. But still remarkable, I think, that Camilla Martin got that interview with her and sort of got the full story. It really leads into a lot of ethical questions because...
And I was actually, I've got to tell you, Mark, I was a little bit surprised by your take on this.
Okay, go ahead. You start.
Is there any justification in throwing a match in any sport at all, ever? I don't think there is, especially not at the Olympics. Their cornerstone is all about athletes trying and mostly failing to win a gold medal. They are striving for this. This is something that they've been training for all of their lives. And to take that away from somebody, even if it's to help your team win a gold medal, I don't know, it just seems totally wrong to me. What possible justification could there be?
Okay, well, look, first and foremost, I think, you know, you look at the Olympic Charter, the Olympic ideals, and you have to, you know, it's about doing the best you can and performing to your best and striving to win and so on. Given that, though, it depends kind of whose position you're looking at. Obviously, Ye is the victim here, right? She wanted to win that game. And, if you know, according to the reports, it was pretty obvious that people who knew the sport, she basically started off playing properly and then made some obvious mistakes to kind of secretly imply that she was being told to throw the game. I don't think it's anyone is surprised by, you know, the fact in Chinese sport, particularly at the Olympic level, the players, the athletes themselves are not in charge. You know, it's the coaches and the team leaders who were calling the shots. So when they got together the night before and said, you will throw this match or you will lose this match, she doesn't have a choice, right? They apparently rewarded her with the same bonuses as if she was Olympic champion. But like, you know, that's not why you play the game. It's like,
no, exactly. Okay. Yeah, exactly. You know?
So, but at the same time, if you're a Chinese fan, then you've got Olympic gold. And had some inconsistencies on the world stage prior to that. So she kind of had her chance, was the feeling amongst some section of the fans, you know, so let's give this chance opportunity to someone else. So from a Chinese perspective, take the individual out of it. And, you know, and the collective view is again, not generalizing, but it's certainly a stronger concept in this part of the world. From a Chinese point of view, it was, you know, the objective was achieved, which was to bring home the gold for China. And Chinese fans, a lot of them would have been happy because, hey, their player won gold.
I don't know, Mark. No, and I do understand that. I mean, I guess the question is, you know, she was told to make it look really close. I mean, there was subterfuge there. There was lying there. They were, you know, pulling one over on spectators and officials, or trying to anyway. And I've got a problem with that.
Okay. All right. So do you also have a problem with, for example, NBA teams playing to lose so they get a higher draft pick?
The difference there, though, Mark, is that players don't tank. Players that are on the field, players on the court, they will try as much as possible to win a game. What happens with a tanking team is that a general manager or a coach will not play their best players, be in a better position to draft a great player the next year. Whereas in this case, it leaves a bad taste in my mouth.
I was hoping you were going to say that, Hai, because that sets me up perfectly for my next point, which is... let me take you back to the 2012 Olympics, also in badminton. And I was actually at that games covering it. So I remember one of the big scandals there. There was in the women's doubles, there was this huge big thing, but basically it was a round robin format. And what happened there was that the Chinese favored pair surprisingly lost in the first round of matches, which meant that they were going to go into a different side of the knockout draw. So then we had this farcical situation where everyone was trying to avoid the favorite Chinese teams early on so they could get round to into the medal rounds and perhaps get a bronze or silver, even gold. And so you had four teams across two matches, all desperately trying to lose. And what happened is that they were given black cards, which they were kicked out. And then they basically spoke to the referees and they were like, okay, you can carry on playing. In the end, they were all kicked out, including a Chinese pair. And then I think some Koreans and some Indonesians as well. So again, they were throwing that game specifically to try to win, if you see what I mean. And we do see this. We see this in things like the World Cup. Every time there's like, oh, France are going to finish second in their group, so we want to avoid them. So we don't want to finish top of our group because then we'll have an easier draw. And I don't know that coaches and players necessarily buy into that, but fans certainly do. And so, you know, if your goal is, well, win at all costs, win the gold medal, you know, that was an example where the format of the tournament, again, not exactly the same, but I think there are some parallels there that you can draw. Yeah, and let me just throw in one more. You know, Andre Agassi famously in his autobiography said how he used to tank at certain points in matches, so that, you know, he's like, well, I've lost this set, I'll just throw some points away, get on to the next set, you know. That's not great for the fans. You're not really supposed to do that. He was kind of slammed. Actually, the more I've thought about this and the more I've had discussions with people, it does seem to be kind of accepted and viewed differently in different parts of the world. You know, American sports fans in particular seem to kind of be have one particular view on this and say, well, you know, with NBA and it's fine. And from a fan's point of view, you can do that. Now,
I guess in auto racing as well. You know, you might
let people through. Yeah, it's team orders. So that, I think that's a fantastic point. That this was basically badminton's equivalent of team orders. And so, I guess the difference there is that everyone knows what's happening and they're open about it, whereas this was behind the scenes.
Exactly.
Even though people kind of knew about it at the time. And let's be clear. You know, yeah, we're screwed. You know, she was screwed out of her shot at gold, and she only found out about it the night before. So, like, that's pretty shitty.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Know, it was, whereas, yeah, it was not part of the plan.
The others were all kind of trying to get something, you know, achieve, you know, a high draft pick, or they were trying to achieve a deeper run later in the tournament or whatever. So, you know, anyway, it was a great story and a fantastic interview, fantastic just get in terms that they were able to get her on camera talking about that, even though it was, you know, more than 20 years on.
Absolutely. Well, let's move on to tennis, Mark. We've talked so much on the show about some of the fantastic women's players that have come out of China, but we haven't really talked about the men. And the reason for that is because there just hasn't been that much success from the men. Last week, though, two players, including Wu Yibing, not only made it to the main draw of the U.S. Open, but in Wu's case, he also got to the third round. Why is this a big deal, Mark?
Well, no Chinese male player had won a single game at any of the Grand Slams for guess how long? 63 years. Like, it's absolutely insane. Particularly, you know, that, like, there have been some players. There haven't been any great Chinese men, male players over the last, you know, as long as I can remember. But they haven't been that bad. But, you know, fortunately, Wu Yibing has now sort of got that monkey off the collective back of the country's male tennis players. So, you know, not only did he win one match, he won two and then played very well, I thought, in the game against Medvedev, the world number one, or at least currently the world number one, although I don't think he's going to be next week. So, you know, this is great for Chinese tennis. The women also did very well in New York. It's been a fantastic tournament. I've watched a lot of it. You know, everyone talking about Serena's, you know, swan song, but there've been so many other storylines. Four of the Chinese women got through to the third round, which was, again, a record at one tournament. So real strength and depth there. You've got Jiang Qinwen, who we've talked about, also had a deep run and Roland Garros at the French Open. So the women have you know, looking good. And hopefully Wu Yibing can kind of kick on from here and convert on some of the promise that he showed 5 years ago when he won the junior tournament as a singles player, a singles junior at the US Open in 2017.
You know, I thought about our interview with Patrick McEnroe when we were talking, you know, we asked him what his theories were about why there are so many women's players coming out of China and why there haven't been many male players that have, you know, reached their level of success. And, you know, his theory was that with the women, at least, you know, they're stuck in China, they're not really traveling, but at least they can play against the men. And that sort of raises their level of competition because the men are faster and stronger and, you know, they just make the women a lot better. But for the men, you know, they don't have that resource available to them. And they, it's imperative for them to leave China and raise their level of competition. And this is something that Wu Yibing mentioned during his press conference.
Yeah, I mean, you know, McEnroe is absolutely right. You know, he was asked, Wu Yibing was asked, so, you know, what's been going on? You haven't really played much the last couple of years. You know, have you had any injuries? He goes, no, I've had a few aches and pains, but no injuries. He specifically said, I have not had any injuries. I just wasn't able to leave China. And what he didn't say, but what has actually happened is that he was contracted to his provincial team, the Zhejiang provincial team. He had to play, if you can believe it. I mean, it's just so frustrating when shit like this happens. But he had to play for the Zhejiang national team at China's national games about a year ago, this time last year. And so he wasn't able to leave because when you come back, still back then, it was 3 weeks of quarantine, which is obviously disastrous preparation. You can't, you know, it's not worth traveling for a few tournaments here and then coming back, staying in a hotel room and not getting any practice whatsoever. We saw at the Australian Open a couple of years ago, people were like, in quarantine, hitting a ball against the wall of their hotel room, but hardly ideal practice conditions. Anyway, so he didn't go. It was only at the start of this year that they finally let him go, and he's been absolutely on fire. Now he's playing in the second tier, you know, the challenger circuit. He won a bunch of tournaments. He went through qualifying. He cruised through qualifying for the US Open. Won three games there. He's had a fantastic year so far in 2022. He's now into the top 150, and the commentators there against Medvedev were saying there's no reason why he couldn't, you know, a year from now, another year from now, be in the top 40, top 50 if he kind of continues on that trend. They think he's got the shots, he's got the game. So that's what's great, but it's just so frustrating. I look at Carlos Alcaraz, who, I mean, he's at the time of recording, he's now in the semifinals. The kid's only 19 and he's already number four in the world. He's going to go even higher at the end of this tournament. So why couldn't Wu Yibing have started a couple of years ago? It's 5 years ago from winning the juniors at the US Open. He's basically been held back by the Chinese system instead of, you know, he's lost ground on his competitors and he's still done really well this year. But it's just, I'd love to have seen him kick on, you know, 2 years ago, and who knows where he would already be now.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned Alcaraz. Actually, he's getting into, I think he's playing, he just won his semifinal yesterday, and he's getting into he's playing in the finals, I think, next.
That was the quarters.
It was just the quarters against Sinner? Yeah. Oh my God. That is insane. What a quarterfinal match that was. Holy shit. Yeah. Like, that's incredible.
It was pretty good. I'm glad that I'm in the Asian time zone. Yeah. I don't know if we're putting this in, but I'm glad we're in the Asian time zone because the game finished at 2:56 a.m. New York time. It was a new record for latest finish, but it was perfect. It was just after lunch for me.
Speaking of Alcaraz, my stepdaughter, Anna, was flying back from Montreal after the Canadian Masters recently. She saw Alcaraz at the airport, who was extremely nice, and they took a photo together, and it was really cute, and she would absolutely kill me if I shared that photo, so that photo will not be shared. But it was very, very cute, and they had a little conversation. And then she actually made it to the U.S. Open as well with her dad, which is really cool. And went to see Serena play and Rafa play, and what a thrill! I was really jealous about that because it does not look like we're going to get much tennis action in China anytime soon. The WTA just announced that the WTA, their finals are going to be held in Texas this year and not in Shenzhen. I mean, that's not a surprise at all, is it? Was there anything surprising at all in the WTA's statement, Mark?
Well, so this has just come out this week. And, you know, for a little bit of context for people who perhaps have forgotten because it's been such a long time, the WTA signed this mammoth 10-year deal, and the season-ending WTA finals, you know, the top eight singles and doubles players, doubles teams, get together in Shenzhen from 2019 all the way through to 2028. And at the time, it was the richest tournament in the world. It was had a bigger purse than the men's corresponding tournament. It was an absolutely fantastic deal for the sport, but so much has changed. What happened is that we got that 1 year in 2019 in Shenzhen. Then it was cancelled in COVID for 2020. And then last year they were scrambling around and they went to Guadalajara in Mexico. And then this year they've done the equivalent. They're going to Dallas, Fort Worth. What they've said in their press release is that they are hopeful of returning to China next year. Now, there's two issues with this, and both of them are big. Number one, and we've spoken on the show before about it, you know, I am confidently predicting that there will be no tennis in China a year from now due to COVID. They just will not allow international tournaments. And, you know, COVID zero is here to stay by basically any metric. And it's deeply frustrating and sad to see, but that's just the reality. My sense is that they have Gemdale, who's the big Chinese sponsor who is backing that tournament. And contractually, I'm sure they have to say, well, until we tell you that you can't come to China, or until the Chinese government says that you can't come with the quarantine and all that sort of stuff, and the players obviously won't accept that today, then they kind of have to say, well, we have this contract in place, so we're looking to get back to China. The other big one, of course, the elephant in the room, is that they've said repeatedly they're not going to come back to China until the Peng Shuai situation is resolved to their satisfaction, which means some sort of investigation, which isn't going to happen. We know this. It's just not going to happen. So what is a satisfactory resolution? And again, we talked about this with Patrick McEnroe. And if people didn't hear that podcast, I would encourage them to go back and take a listen to that show, because he had some great thoughts on this. But, you know, off the top of my head, for example, the Chinese Tennis Association could theoretically say, you know, we're launching this foundation in support of women, and the WTA could say, well, you know, this is good, and this shows, you know, this gives us a face-saving solution to come back, and then the Chinese side doesn't need to either mention it or mention Peng Shuai and so on, and you know, they can somehow find a resolution. But the quote was, and the follow-up, they've clarified the statement about coming back to China. They've said, we are hopeful of returning, but we will not compromise the principles on which we were founded, or our founding principles. And, you know, that goes back to Billie Jean King and women's rights and all that, basically how the women's tour came together. So, you know, forget COVID, there's no prospect of them coming back to China. So it's farcical to sort of say, well, we're going to come back to China. But I think contractually is my guess. They kind of felt they had to at this point, but it's not going to happen. When will it happen? Well, that's the real question.
Wait, can I ask you, I don't know if you know the answer to this, but Gemdale, the title sponsor for Shenzhen, like, are they solvent right now? What's going on with them? Like,
well, so they're in a wider real estate area, and anyone who's sort of following the Chinese economy, not a lot of happy things being written about the Chinese real estate sector at the moment, and that is continuing. I don't know the specific case of Gemdale. They're not as high profile as some of the others.
Like Evergrande, which abandoned their stadium project, right?
Yes, yeah. And obviously, you know, their team's been in trouble, their sort of CSL team as well, Chinese Super League. The way that the sponsorship model works in China is very different. They underwrite it, and basically they bring a lot of attention to the local government, and they effectively get preferential treatment for land development. So they're not really making money off people coming, you know, bums on seats, as it were, and expecting full stadiums for those matches. That's not really the business model, how it works in China. But you know, they obviously thought it was worth their while to invest in, you know, that $14 million per year, the price for 10 years, you know, pretty significant.
In 2019. It was
correct.
Worth their
while. Exactly. But the whole landscape has changed. COVID obviously has changed the global landscape. Then you've got the Chinese real estate sector. Then you've got Peng Shuai. I mean, the whole thing, like, who knows what Gemdale is thinking now? I'm going to have to do some digging. It's a good point. But that's a mess.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm speculating here, but maybe for them, this is sort of a blessing in disguise. Like, this is $14 million that they do not have to spend every year.
Yeah, I mean, look, who knows until they come out with something, you know, we don't really know what they're thinking. But I think what is frustrating is that, you know, on both the men's and the women's side, the future is bright for tennis in China, or for Chinese tennis, not for tennis in China. And it would be such a shame if, you know, all the best players, you know, if China is developing a whole host of superstar players and they can't play in their home country. I mean, just beyond frustrating. But, you know, that's at least what we're looking at for the medium term. But hopefully somehow they can find some sort of resolution that will, it's not going to satisfy everyone. I know 100% people will be. You know, they'll get criticized at WTA for coming back to China if and when they do at some unspecified point in the future. But, you know, there is definitely a part of me that thinks, look, find a way somehow, just because, you know, we need sports here. It's just like, come on.
I know, Mark. But, you know, it's what it sounds like to me is that zero COVID is sort of masking all these other issues that, you know, people are going to have to
it's a perfect excuse for not having to address the Peng Shuai situation with the WTA.
Exactly.
But a year from now, you know, it starts to get pretty old pretty quickly.
That's it for our show this week. So excited to be back with you, Mark, and excited to talk about sports in China and more. We're going to try a lot of different things this coming year. We're going to live stream our episode next week on YouTube, which I'm really nervous about, but I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
It'll be fine. we're definitely going to try and experiment a little bit, potentially with the format, whether it's live streaming and also the content. You know, as we talked about at the top of the show, you know, China and sports right now is in a very strange space, and so we're going to have to try to evolve. You know, and I think that's the right word, you know, evolve the podcast to make it appeal to as many people as possible. So, you know, please hit us up on all the usual places. You know, if there's things you want to talk about, if there's questions you have, things you want us to talk about or people you want to hear us speak to and interview, please let us know. And we'd love to hear from you.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for listening. We will be back next week.